You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Friday edition of the Pronk Pop Show. Today I want to pick up where I left off yesterday. I walked into the studio, and I had to get someone to let me in the studio. And I told them generally what I was going to talk about. And I said, you know what I think is going to happen? I said, President Trump is going to launch some cruise missiles into Syria. Now, I didn't think it was going to happen by the end of my show. It hadn't happened at that time, and there was no news on it. But my gut was telling me that's what he was going to do. I have no idea to the extent of it at all, but I didn't think he was going to use troops at all, nor did I think he was going to use aircraft. This is a rather limited attack on Syria. We can't miss it, but last night, my show ended a little over 9:05, which is 10:05 on the East Coast. And as I was walking past the newsroom, and they were still working on putting the paper to bed, I saw breaking news. President Trump has launched an attack on Syria. I had no idea, and I didn't see the details. I was really late for some other things that I had to do. And then I subsequently learned, and I updated my notes. For those that are new to the show, the way you listen to the show is go to prompops.wordpress.com, and under my photograph, you'll see links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. And under that, you'll get my notes for the show. And they're rather extensive, especially for this one and last show. But I normally don't do this, but I put an update breaking news, the fact that we are in an undeclared war. And the reason why I emphasize that is the president did not really consult with Congress at all, other than some brief phone calls to members of Congress just prior to the attack. This was a totally surprise, undeclared war. I emphasize that because I'm a classical liberal in terms of my philosophy. I believe in the limited government. I believe in the United States Constitution. And the founding fathers were very clear in the Constitution that only Congress can declare war. Now, that does not mean if our armed forces are attacked, the president has to go to Congress to get a declaration. He can issue orders all the time because he is commander-in-chief, and I understand that. The commander-in-chief can order the military to take actions. So you can argue under that clause he has the power to do this. I beg to differ, because Syria did not attack us. I don't like the Assad regime. I hope they fall. The sooner the better. But what I was arguing last night is, what's going to happen should we get involved extensively in Syria and overthrow Assad? I don't think that's going to be as easy as some people think, as long as the Russians and Iran and Hezbollah are supporting them. But let's say for a moment that the Assad regime is toppled. Who's going to replace him? I have no idea, but who is in rebellion against the Assad regime? They're Sunnis. The majority in Syria are Sunnis. The Assad family, as well as, are Alawite, and that's a very small minority, but a fairly large minority. But they are a minority. The Sunnis are by far outnumber the Alawites, and the Alawites are primarily along the coast. Who is fighting them, though, are Al-Qaeda, an Al-Qaeda affiliate called Al-Nusra, the Al-Nusra Front, Jabhat Al-Nusra Front. Yes, that Al-Qaeda. And they're very, how should I say this, well-trained, well-equipped, well-financed, and have used chemical weapons. I want to emphasize that. And have gotten those chemical weapons from a NATO ally, Turkey, the precursors for a chemical weapon such as sarin. And before I forget, there's been no confirmation that it's sarin gas at all. None whatsoever. Now, most reports are saying a chemical gas attack, rather deliberately saying a chemical gas attack. It looks like it's chlorine gas. There are a number of, and chlorine is deadly, folks. And if you were producing chlorine and have a leak in a plant, you better get out fast because it will kill you. But sarin gas is many times more deadly. They're both deadly. But sarin gas lingers in your clothing, and you can't touch people that are victims of a sarin attack. Because if you will, you die. And that's why a number of people are suspicious of the reports coming out of Syria in the rebel region that, one, it wasn't a sarin gas attack, and two, so what type of gas is it? Chlorine. And what you do there is you try to wash it off, and that's what they were doing. But who has been supplying al-Nusra, the Islamic State, and other rebel groups in the area? Turkey, as well as funding from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, where are the two financiers, and in some cases providing weapons. Now why? They're Sunnis. See, it's a Sunni civil war against a secular regime where the Alawites head that regime. It's a dictator. Ladies and gentlemen, the Assad family, both father and son, have butchered their population. I want to make very, very clear, I wish the Assad regime was gone, but for the last 8 years of Obama, what has happened? The number of people dying as a result of actions taken by the Syrian government has gone up, up, and up, and today it's over 500,000. People have been killed by the government. So an additional 70 more, and one is frankly too much. No matter how they were killed, whether it's gas, you're just as dead, whether it's an artillery shell, a barrel bomb, a sniper bullet, an RPG grenade, a grenade attack, you're dead. Innocent people get killed in civil wars. Civil wars, by their very nature, tend to be violent with atrocities. And this has been going on year after year after year. So the population, that's 500,000 people in one country. And millions of people have fled to Iraq, to Turkey, to Lebanon, to Jordan, to Egypt, many places in the Middle East, refugees, and into Europe. Syria is a failing state, a barbaric state. Who put the Assad regime in? The French did. I'm not going to get into that history, but the point I'm trying to make is, why the sudden attack now? And here's why not a lot of people, that's not true. A minority are suspicious of the story that's being put out by big lie media and the federal government. No one is questioning. They're just accepting whatever the federal government says, that the Assad regime used chemical gas to kill people. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I'm not going to prejudge it because we've had some history here. We were told that by Barack Obama. And then it turns out, lo and behold, in one of the attacks, that it wasn't the Syrian government. It was one of the rebel groups that got the chemical agents through Turkey and produced chemical weapons, not as sophisticated as the Syrian government's. And let me remind you, because a lot of people have short memories, Barack Obama was about to launch a major attack on Syria, and he stopped short. Why did he stop short? And far in excess of what Donald Trump did. We were talking not only cruise missiles, but also two wings of B-52 bombers that carry bunker busters to destroy most of the military capability of the Syria regime. But he stopped short. Why? The Syrian government offered to hand over the entire arsenal of chemical weapons, chemical biological weapons that they had. And the reason was simple. They knew it wouldn't be wise to use them because they would be criticized worldwide using these barbaric gases that first were used where? In Western Europe during World War I. By both sides, the Germans and the Axis powers, as well as the Allies, the France, United Kingdom, and the United States. And gas killed tens of thousands of soldiers during that war. And it's not a pleasant way to die. But you're dead. Whether it's a machine gun bullet, an artillery shell, or gas, you end up dead. And that was World War I that we got into 100 years ago this week. See, I don't see the difference, except from a propaganda point of view. It's very effective. It's only human nature to be persuaded by pictures of small babies and children dying, choking. And that's the symptoms of what they had, is not of sarin gas. Sarin gas kills quickly. Chlorine gas still kills, but not as quick. You can go half an hour before it even starts affecting you. Depends how much of the gas you get on you. Now, I'm not going to get into the different types of gases and all, but the first issue that should be asked, one, what killed these people? How did they die? And we need unbiased, an international agency that truly is unbiased, to do the autopsies. Not the Turks. Definitely not the Turks. Because their hands are not clean. They have provided weapons, including the chemicals needed for these weapons, to the various rebel groups in Syria. Mainly because they want to take over part of Syria. They have an interest in Syria. Remember, the Ottoman Empire was declining for many, many years, but at the end of World War I, actually a couple of years later, I believe it was 1923 or 24, the Ottoman Empire ended. The Ottomans, the Turks, Turkey, controlled much of the Middle East. And because they were on the wrong side of World War I, namely the loser side, they lost their empire. Erdogan, I think, wants to revive that. And to do that, he needs to take over territory, starting with Syria. I mention that because you need to understand that in Syria, it's very much a civil war, but what divides the sides is really religion, primarily. The majority being Sunni and the minority are Alawites. But the Syrian government does have supporters, both Jewish, Christian, and other religions. Why? Because they protect other religious minorities. But it's been a brutal dictatorship. Hundreds of thousands of people have died. But keep in mind, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Syrian soldiers have died, as well as civilians on the Syrian government side. Now, I ask the question, whose side should we be on? And my answer is nobody's side. There isn't a good choice here. There are no choices here. Do you want the Islamic State to take over Syria? I don't think so. Do you want Al-Qaeda to take over? I don't think so. And there are many rebel groups, but they mostly hate our guts. Yeah, we have in the past, probably continuing to today, provided arms, money, training, intelligence to some of the Syrian rebels. The danger there is those weapons can quickly find their way into radical Islamic jihadists that do not wish as well. There are many, many groups that are rebelling in Syria because you got to consider the religion, what ethnic group they're part of, as well as what tribe and what's happened because this civil war is dragged out. The cities and infrastructure of Syria have been destroyed. Many cities, it's like you've seen pictures of Berlin, for example, or one of the major German cities after World War II. Because what's happened, artillery has targeted buildings where they suspect the rebels are, and they are there. So it's a terrible situation, but who appointed the United States policeman of the world? I miss that. Now, I know there are many, not many, but there's a significant minority in this country. In the Republican Party, they're called neoconservatives. Originally, they were Democrats, liberal or progressive Democrats, that moved to the Republican Party when the Democratic Party moved left. That's what happened. As when McGovern got the nomination, he lost to Nixon. Many of them abandoned the Democratic Party and slowly but surely moved over to the Republican Party because they had a more aggressive interventionist foreign policy. And they're still here. They're not a big force, but they make their views known. The two individuals that come to mind are Senator John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham. I mention their names because who was applauding, cheering Donald Trump today? Because in the past, they hated his guts. They didn't have a kind word to say about either candidate Trump or President Trump until he launched his missile attack of cruise missiles, Tomahawk cruise missiles, 59 of them, that destroyed a number of aircraft and damaged severely one of the runways. A little less than half of the missiles actually landed on the base, but it did damage. Now, supposedly the reason that this base was targeted is the airplanes that delivered the chemical gas, whatever. And that's sort of like climate change. It's a rather general term. Well, what type of chemical gas? The answer is we don't know. I don't know, and the federal government doesn't know. Or if they do, they certainly not telling us. But the story is that Syrian Air Force, not Russian, but Syrian Air Force aircraft fired this gas into that area in Idlib province. Idlib is a province. And that's what killed 70 people, men, women, children, many of them sleeping, and injured, I believe, over 100. I don't know the exact number. That is the government, U.S. governments, as well as France, United Kingdom, Western Europe, Israel. They're all going along with this story. It may be true. It may not be true. I don't know. Because this could be what's called another false flag operation. You blame it on someone, in this case, the Syrian government. But someone else actually does it. They use the term false flag. It's flying another flag, the flag of the government or country you want to blame it on, even though you're not on their side. So it's a false flag, trying to explain the term. We won't know, if we ever know, whether this is a false flag operation. It's usually weeks, months, years after the fact. Provided there's some good investigative journalism and people leak information, highly classified information, that provide you some insight as to what really happened. I don't know what really happened, but it's being used as a pretext to justify attacking Syria. Now, what's interesting, the U.S. government is saying, and the president is saying, the reason they attack this airport is it's from this airbase, Surat Airfield, in Syria, that the planes came from, and we can track them. I'm sure you can, or pretty sure you can. But what aren't they telling you? It's from this airport that the Syrian government attacks the Islamic State and, to a lesser extent, al-Nusra Front. And that you need to keep in mind. Second point is the Assad regime is winning the civil war and has been winning the civil war, assisted by Russia, supposedly entering into a peace conference to try to settle this. I bring that background up is a number of people asking the question, it doesn't make sense at all for him, namely Assad, the dictator, to do this. Nor does it make any sense for Russia to encourage him to do this. It's the last thing that they should do. Yet suddenly does it? Now, let me quickly say, they're incompetent and stupid dictators that are so arrogant that would do this. But a rational person, given the situation, the last thing he should be doing is launching a chemical gas attack, especially since you have a lot more effective weapons to kill people. Barrel bombs is what they use. They throw them out of helicopters. And it kills a lot of people and brings down buildings. They're full of explosives. They go off and kill anyone that's in a radius of where it ends up falling, including bringing down buildings and killing people in it. You're still dead. It's not a gas. And we use high explosive all the time. Why do you think we're dropping on the Islamic State? Not leaflets, although Obama did some of that, warning truck drivers, but that's another story. So I'm skeptical of this, and I'll tell you why. I listen to a lot of talk radio, and I hear a lot of, and because of that, I hear a lot of newscasts at the top of the hour and the bottom of the hour. And I do it every day. And this was several weeks ago, before the Syrian launch, of the U.S. launch of missiles into Syria, as well as this gas attack. And I just noted to myself, I said, they're banging the war drums again. It's like they're readying the people for a war. They're getting us ready. I couldn't put my finger on it. It's just I got that impression. You're preparing the American people to be receptive for the United States government to go to war. So there are many unanswered questions, and they might remain unanswered. But there is a history here. A similar effort by President Obama. And again, the story was the Syrian government used chemical gas. This is after supposedly the Syrians had given up their entire arsenal and the United States government destroyed it. And that's what happened. That's why he did not launch the attack. One of the reasons. The other one was there was enough evidence to show maybe it, even though after the Syrian government gave up supposedly their entire stockpile of chemical weapons to the United States, who subsequently destroyed that, a big operation cost over $1 billion. See, neither the Syrian government nor the Russian government had the money. But the proposition was, the offer was, we'll give up every single chemical weapon we have, and you can destroy it. And we did, or at least we thought we did. And Syria promised not to use chemical weapons. See, that's just another reason why he shouldn't do it. It doesn't make sense for him to do it. But it makes a lot of sense for the rebels, the other side of this civil war, to try to convince the American people and the people of other nations that the Syrian government was using chemical weapons again. Yet we quickly find out that one of the doctors at the hospitals where these people were being brought in, after some checking, because with the internet today, you can check out people fairly quickly. He happens to be a radical Islamic terrorist. He was promoting this. And I saw this. I saw the video, and I was suspicious. I didn't know who he was then. I really did not. There was no name attached to him. But I said, first of all, he speaks English, and he's spending a lot of time. And I was getting the impression, A, it's propaganda, and it's biased. They wanted to make people watching the video fall for the propaganda, if you want the fake news. It's the Syrian government that's responsible for that. Guess what? Many people fell for it, and the pictures. It tugs at your heart. No one wants to see a baby or a small child or anyone suffer like that. And many of them died. But you got to be skeptical. You have to have an open mind. And you have to be a little cynical, especially since this appears to be a replay of what happened in 2013. So I don't know if it was a false flag. If you believe the United States government, and I tend to do it up to a point, and they know the majority of the Americans will believe them. They believe what the government says. If it's in writing, it's on the television networks, they'll believe. And what happens, the reporters just regurgitate the information that they get from the government. Like it's fact. It's fact. The government said it, it must be true. I know when the government says it, suspect it, because many times it's not true. People have agendas, and they're trying to manipulate you, persuade you of their point of view. And many times that means they're lying to you or misleading you, or taking it out of context. Taking a nation to war, and that's what happened. We're at war with Syria. Now, the Russians said this is an act of aggression. It is. It's an act of war is what it is. Now, I'll quickly say it was a limited attack. It wasn't anywhere comparable to what President Obama had planned for Assad. Remember the red line, the red line, the red line? And then they stopped because he gave up his weapons and then subsequently crossed the red line. What's the red line? He used chemical weapons after giving up all his chemical weapons, or apparently gave it up. I don't know if he gave it up. Maybe he kept some. It wouldn't surprise me that he would keep some. What really surprised me is he would be foolish enough to use it, or arrogant enough to use it, because he knew, or should have known, and the Russians knew this, all hell's going to break loose. Now, you could look at it. This was a test of our new president, and that might very well be. Now, I believe that President Trump has made a mistake. Now, it is popular what he's done. But who are the people rushing to the microphone and congratulating Donald Trump for doing this? The very people in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, up until last night, couldn't say one kind word about President Trump. and accusing him of being in collusion with the Russians. See, it's hard to say he was in collusion with the Russians after he attacked Russia's main ally in the Middle East, namely Syria. And that might be part of the motivation that Trump used. But besides the neocon, they're Republican in name only, both in the House and the Senate, the Democrats were praising him. Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader of the House. Chuck Schumer, the Senate minority leader. And most, I won't say all, but most of big lie media, your television networks and the papers. Now, what you need to understand, and this is another reason why my antenna are up. The very same day, Hillary Clinton was given a speech. I forget the name of it. It's the International Women Conference. She was given a speech, and she said that we should attack Syria, you know, just under the wire. So she was on record. Now, be careful of this. Be very careful of this. When George Bush asked Congress for an authorization for the use of military force, oh, yes, he got Republican support, but he also got Democratic support that quickly evaporated a couple of years down the road. Now, why does this happen? Because it's only natural that the American people, when we're at war, want to support the president, as do I. But because I follow this, and I'm naturally suspicious of anyone in power. I don't care if it's Democrats or Republicans. I'm skeptical. You know, the phrase, I think the motto in Missouri is show me. Show me the evidence. And I don't mean government reports. You know, we haven't gotten access to samples of the chemicals that kill these people. I'm not doubting that people died and people were seriously injured from this. Not at all. But we need autopsies by independent agencies that are not in any way influenced because they have an agenda for Syria. And that means forget about Turkey, France, the United Kingdom, and the United States. It truly has to be an independent international organization to examine not only the bodies, but samples of the material to see exactly what was the agent here, what was the chemical here, and try to identify what type of gas it was. There are several types of gases. They're all deadly. Some are quicker than others. Now, if you're going to die by natural gas, I think you would want a quick death, and sarin definitely is a quick death. It is highly, highly poisonous, many times more deadly than cyanide, for example, that's used to kill people in the gas chamber. So I think the jury is still out. And the other thing that I'm always suspicious of is when there's a rush to do something. This was quick. It was a surprise. It took a lot of people up until about 24 to 48 hours by surprise. Then things leak out. And that's what was happening. You heard it in newscasts. You got to send ships, position ships, to launch those cruise missiles. And you heard it on the news that they were in the Mediterranean. So there were clues, you better believe there were clues, that we were going to do something. Now, many thought that the reason Donald Trump suddenly changed his mind, because if you listen to what he said both years ago and recently, he didn't think we should get involved in Syria. And that's where I'm still at, by the way. I don't think we should intervene in Syria at all. Not that there are many justified reasons to taking out the Assad regime. See, this is a very much a local problem, not an international problem, a local problem. And it's been going on for many, many, many years. The United States has many problems. I was going to do a show today on the stagnating U.S. economy, why it's stagnating, and mainly because government spending is out of control, over $20 trillion in national debt, the unfunded liabilities are over $200 trillion. The United States is, in essence, broke. We don't have the money anymore to be policemen of the world, which I don't think is a good idea, nor do we have the money to have hundreds of bases all over the world stockpiled with weapons, armaments, supplies to fight wars, or more accurately, intervene in country after country. Those days should stop. The American empire is very much overextended. We've overreached. Who should stop what's happening in Syria? The people in that region. Turkey, even though they are supporting one side. Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, just to name a few. Oh, the United States can support our allies. Jordan is an ally. Saudi Arabia, I think, is still an ally. I'm not sure about that, though. I have some reservations about that. Because who has in the past, until they figured out what was going on, been funding what is now, originally was Al-Qaeda in Iraq, morphed after they literally were not destroyed, but most of them were dead, some were in prison, but they were released and recruited more people and went from Al-Qaeda in Iraq to, when they broke off from Al-Qaeda in Syria, namely the Al-Nusra Front, they had a parting of the ways, became the Islamic State. I've said on this show in the past that it's the responsibility of the Sunni Arabs. They created this monster. They have to destroy this monster. And I say that because what's required to do it? And it is going on, but it's not the Sunnis or Saudis that are doing it. They're going to have to go street by street, block by block, building by building, apartment by apartment, room by room, clear that room and kill whoever is in it. The challenge is many of the people in those apartments, in those rooms, in those buildings are not the Islamic State. They're civilians, innocent civilians, that are just as much in fear of the Islamic State than the people going into those buildings and rooms trying to kill them. Keep in mind, the number one victim of the Islamic State are people of the same faith, are Muslims, even Sunnis. The Islamic State are Wahhabis, and that religious sect came right out of Saudi Arabia. It's a very fundamentalist, conservative version of Islam, but is considered extreme. And there are non-militant Wahhabis, but most of them aren't. And the ones that join the Islamic State, they're religious fanatics. They are what Donald Trump calls, and I call, radical Islamic terrorists. Now, I add another word to it, jihadist. They're engaged in a jihad, a holy war, against those that do not share their religious beliefs. And that's why they kill other Muslims, primarily Shias. If you happen to be a Shia caught by someone from the Islamic State, a jihadist, you most likely will be killed on the spot, maybe tortured and then killed, mainly with a bullet in the head, but they could cut off your head. They could burn you. They could, if you're a homosexual, throw you off a roof. And they believe what they're doing is just right. It's their duty to do this. They are very much religious fanatics. And these religious fanatics have, until very recently, been on a rampage, not only in Syria, but in Iraq. And now there is a concerted effort by the Iraqi government, where the majority are Shia, to take back the territory that the Islamic State took over in Mosul. And now the Kurds, another ethnic group, with the assistance of the United States and others, is taking Raqqa, their capital in Syria. The Kurds are Sunnis. They're not Arab. They're not Turkish. They're Sunnis. But the Islamic State is primarily Arab and Sunni of the Wahhabi sect. Now, I'm not trying to confuse you, but you need to understand some basics. It's primarily a religious sectarian war. It's been going on for many, many decades. There have been periods of peace, and it's somewhat comparable to the religious wars that the Christians had in Europe, where Roman Catholics, and the Protestants were killing each other. And depending on your religion and where you are, you persecuted, and in some cases tortured and killed and burned, people that didn't share your religious view. See, at one time, there was very little tolerance for differences in the religion of the population. So if you were Jewish, for example, or not the right sect of Christian, you were persecuted. Some cases burned at the stake. I bring it up because what we're seeing here is somewhat comparable to that. Because at its core, the difference is religious. That's why I think Donald Trump is right, but I've said it way before him. It's radical Islamic terrorist jihadist. And they were calling for people in other nations that shared their fanatic views to come first to Syria, then to Iraq. But all their successes, and they were very successful, especially when they established their caliphate. See, what they want to establish is Sharia law, religious law, being the law of the land, and the land that they control being under control of a caliph. They wanted to bring back the caliphate, just like the Turks want to bring back the caliphate. And for many, many hundreds of years, they had that Ottoman Empire and controlled much of the Middle East. I know most Americans, unfortunately, but understandably, don't follow this at all or closely. They have a job to do, a career. They're trying to get educated, and they have interest. When they're not working or going to school, they're engaged in leisure activities, entertainment, sports, movies, games, whatever pleases them. And they don't care about politics, even though it does affect them. They don't follow this closely at all. They might turn on the news and get news from both the radio and television, but they really are not conversant with the issues. And many of them, like I said in the last show, they're ignorant and apathetic. I don't know. I don't care, even though it can affect them. I'll be the first to say your chances, the probability of you being injured or killed by a terrorist is a very, very small number. As someone jokingly said, you're more likely to be attacked by a shark in your bathtub. That was a joke. But the odds or the probability are very small. But if you do not control this, it gets out of hand. And you have people in the world that are not good people. They're out for themselves. They're in it for power. They're in it for money. They're in it for wealth. And they want to control the government. And some are very, very bad actors and will kill their people. And that's what's happened in Syria. And invariably, when that happens, people push back. And you get a very violent civil war where atrocities are not rare, they're common. What do you do about it? You see, the United States, given its financial situation, and the fact that we have a rather long history of intervening, we are today the world superpower, the hegemon. But there are rivals to that. China is the one that immediately comes to mind. Russia is another one. They have nuclear weapons. But their economies, their wealth, is significantly less, especially on a per capita basis, than the United States. We have a much higher standard of living. And we could have a much significantly higher standard of living if the government would leave its people alone and not intervene in the economy domestically and not intervene in the world time and time again. What I favor is a rising, significantly growing economy, and that requires peace and prosperity. And you'll get that rising standard of living if we stop being policemen of the world. Stop trying to nation build when we don't know the language, we don't know the culture, we don't know the history, we don't know the religion. We are ignorant of other peoples and other nations. And when we interject or interfere with what's going on in the country, especially when we occupy a country, there is deep resentment that quickly turns into hatred and they start killing us. I hope this is very much the end of Donald Trump's intervention into Syria. Now, people are noting he hasn't said what he's going to do. He likes to keep it to himself and surprise people. But he has a problem. I don't have a problem, but he has a problem. He has supporters that he convinced that, with the exception of the Islamic State that he made clear he wanted to destroy, that he truly didn't believe in intervention, wanted to stay out of the Iraq war, stay out of Syria. That's what he said. And many people believed him. I didn't believe him. I didn't vote for him. I'll say it again for new listeners. I consider Donald Trump a New York City, more specifically a Manhattan liberal Democrat. I never bought that he was a Republican. He became a Republican because that was the only path he could see, first to get a nomination and second to get elected. Oh, I saw he could do it, but most people did not. So I'm very skeptical of Donald Trump, and that's why I don't trust him. He wanted to make out like he was a nationalist, a populist. And the Trump supporters that voted for him, as well as Republicans, independents, and Democrats that voted for him, believed in what he said. They didn't believe he was like the other ones. Who are the other ones? Democrats, to start out with. Republican in name only, what I call rollover Republicans. The Democrats tell them what they want, And the Republicans ask, how many times do you want me to roll over? That's why I call them rollover Republicans. They used to be called Rockefeller Republicans. Another term is Rhino Republicans in name only. They're liberal Republicans. Some are even progressive Republicans. So between the Democrats and a good number of Republicans and independents, many were against him, but many were persuaded that he was an outsider. He was not an establishment candidate, certainly not of the Democratic Party, nor of the Republican Party. So unlike the previous election where Mitt Romney lost, many Republicans came out for various reasons. I need to get into it right now. They came out, many did, Republicans, because they knew if Hillary Clinton was the candidate, and she was, they thought she was going to get elected. That was the consensus, both of the Democratic Party and big lie media, that were in her corner. She had the money. She had the backing of mainstream media, what I call big lie media, the television networks, the press, the newspapers, the print media, your large city papers. She had the backing of academics. Why? Because most of them, not all, but a majority are liberal / or progressive Democrats. They're for big government. They believe that the answer to society's problems is another government program, another law, another regulation, and to pay for it, we need higher and higher taxes. That's what they believe. Even though, I always point out, governments kill people, including our government. Our government killed people yesterday, not even 24 hours ago. Governments have engaged in genocide. Governments routinely kill their own people, whether it's in communist China, Syria, Russia, yes, even in the United States. Governments must be limited because if they're not, if they become huge, big, they quickly become corrupt, and the very wealthy, what I call the donor-owner class, some rent, many buy politicians of both parties to control them. They're bought and paid for politicians. And as the United States government has gotten bigger and bigger, not only have we run up a large national debt, by every year, almost every year, running up massive deficits where we spend many hundreds of billions of dollars more than we get in terms of tax receipts or revenue. We do it year in, year out. That's why the national debt gets bigger and bigger. And that's another reason I don't think Donald Trump is going to be successful, because he won't come to grips with that. If you can't get government spending under control, both discretionary spending as well as mandatory spending, in the next show I'll get into that, the difference. But think of mandatory spending is Social Security, Medicare are the big ones, but also welfare, or income security is the word they use to describe welfare. Unless you rein in those entitlement programs, where if you meet certain qualifications, you get benefits, you get money. If you don't rein in both mandatory expenditures and discretionary spending, for example, for defense, but all the rest of the departments, this country is going down the drain. And as the debts have piled up, the unfunded liabilities have piled up, you notice what happens. The economic growth rates, instead of being the historical average of around 3.5%, are now routinely 2%, and some quarters less, and a few quarters more. What we have today is a giant warfare and welfare state. And it's too big, and it will fail. There will be a day of reckoning. We can't pay our bills, because what we're doing, not only overtaxing everybody today, but overspending to the extent that even with borrowing, it's not enough. We are burdening future generations. That's immoral. Any people, any individual, any family, any corporation, school district, college, business, charity, has to live within its means, and we're not living within our means. We have to cut back. And if Donald Trump is not up to it, and I don't think he is up to it, and let me be fair, the Democratic Party, they just want to make it bigger, tax more and more. And unfortunately, the Republican Party is the same way. That's why I'm not a Democrat or a Republican anymore. They're not fiscally responsible. They're not prudent. That's what we're talking about here, prudence and being fiscally responsible, balancing your budget every year. There's no urgency. There's no sense that, first of all, it's a problem. Many people think we can keep on doing it. We can't. We no longer have the luxury to be policemen of the world. We never really could afford it. We can't afford it anymore. Oh, we spent, shot 59 missiles. The cost of those missiles, I understand, is a little under $1.6 million. So we spent over $94 million, to 59 missiles exploded over Syria, less than half on the airbase. I don't know where the other ones, that surprises me, by the way. I don't know. I didn't think they were that inaccurate. And that might be propaganda from the Syrian government, but be that as it may, we spent some money. Now, you buy these weapons to eventually use them. And it was a good training exercise. But people were killed at that airbase. And yes, aircraft were destroyed, not as many as we expected. And there was damage to the runway and the hangars. So, there, you know, governments, our military, what do? They break things and kill people. That's what our military does. It kills people and does damage. That's their mission. And to kill more of them than us. There were no casualties on our side, at least no report of anyone being injured. But people were killed and injured in Syria. Did Syria attack us? Nope. I'm not aware of Syria attacking us. Donald Trump decided to give the order, for whatever reason, and launch the missiles. As commander-in-chief, he has that right. But I will remind him, the founding fathers in the Constitution made it very, very clear that only Congress can declare war. Now, I'm not being naive here. I lost count over 100 times. I think it's approaching 150. It might even be more than 150. We have engaged in military action against other nations without a declaration of war. That's part of the problem. We're not taking the Constitution seriously. And as a result, what do we have today? And Donald Trump is not the first one. We have an imperial presidency. And what many of his supporters that voted for him feel today, not all of them, some are still supporting him. This is a popular move, at least initially. You see, military action becomes more and more unpopular as American soldiers start dying. The body bags start coming home, and our wounded start coming home. Then what was initially very popular becomes unpopular. Now, it usually takes many years for that to happen. Generally, I'm not surprised today that most people are applauding. Even his enemies are applauding what he did, getting on that bandwagon. You might even say he's uniting the country by going to war. That's the patriotic thing to do. Back our president. But you see, that's not what he ran on. And that's why he's made a mistake. Because many people thought he was a non-interventionist. He didn't want to intervene in country after country, but he just did. And many of them will perceive him as just another progressive global interventionist, not an American first nationalist, because he started an undeclared war. That's what he did by launching those 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles. Not all, but a few talk show hosts, as well as people that voted for him, are saying this is his first mistake. I think it is his first mistake. Many, though, are saying this is a turning point. This is a reset with the Russians. Donald Trump is old enough, as am I, to remember the Vietnam War. It was popular for many, many years, and we were winning that war. But ultimately, we lost it because we lost the support of the American people. Certainly not at first, but eventually as those body bags, Americans, came home and were buried. That has an impact on their family, their friends, their community. And when our wounded came home, and some fortunate came home with whole bodies, they didn't come home to cheers or parades. See, I can remember that. Oh, I was in the military. Fortunately, never went to Vietnam. Spent 5 years, a little over 5 years of my career in one place, Dayton, Ohio. I was one of the lucky ones. But many Americans either didn't come back, or if they did, they came back to be buried in a cemetery. And their family, their mothers, their fathers, their wives, their children mourned. We need to remember that. It's very, very easy to go to war, but it becomes increasingly difficult to get out of a war. And what I said yesterday was a question that presidents should ask not only their Joint Chiefs of Staff, their military advisors, but also their foreign diplomatic advisors. What is your plan? What is your strategy for winning the peace? You see, that's what gets us in trouble. We focus all our energies on the resources that we need to win a war. And in so doing, don't understand that winning battles doesn't mean we'll win the peace. That's what gets us in trouble. Because the people that put their lives on the line, many of them don't come home. They're the real heroes. But what's happened in the countries we've been at? Many civilians, many military also have died. That's why in many countries today, Americans are hated. They're not considered liberators. We've become the ugly American and now the deeply resented American. That's what happens if you're arrogant enough, and we have a lot of people in Congress and the military that truly believe in interventionism, believe in the American empire, but they don't know their history. I can't think of one empire. There might be one that did not at first rise, but ultimately failed. They declined and they fell. Invariably, it was because of military action far from their home country. So before we go to war, we should remember the wisdom of the founding fathers. They purposely gave the power to go to war to Congress because they knew that the executive, the president, it would be a great temptation to start wars, give the orders to attack, attack. The world is full of evil people, monsters. Many of them need killing because they're killing not only their people but others. But the American people have reached a point, both from an economic point of view and really have become more and more realistic. They're sick of these wars. It's war after war after war. It's intervention after intervention after intervention. And what do we have to show for it? What thanks do we get? The American people do not want to go to war in the Middle East. They do not. The people that need to deal with the many or several religious sectarian wars going on in Iraq, Syria, Egypt, Libya, they need to solve their own problems. They should not turn to the United States and request our intervention. Doesn't mean we can't provide them intelligence, can't sell them armaments, can't provide them training, but they no longer should expect that American sons and daughters will put their lives on their line, go into harm's way, to become umpires in a bloody, violent civil war, where we become the force in the middle trying to divide two groups that hate each another and have been hating each another for decades. The American people will not support any longer intervention after intervention after intervention. The warmongers, the interventionists, both of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, are not the friends of the American people. And Donald Trump ran as supposedly a friend of the American people, that he was not going to intervene in country after country. Yet in less than 100 days, he already has launched a missile attack, yes, limited, but people have already died. It's an undeclared war. And I know we've had more than 100 of them. You always want to get the support of the American people before you go to war. And most of the time, you will get the support of the American people. But you need the debate. You need the discussion. Because war is not something that should be treated lightly. Because people are killed, maimed, wounded, damaged, and it can and has gone on and on and on. When are we going to have peace, a lasting peace and prosperity? We will not have peace and prosperity as long as we have the American empire that has given us the warfare and welfare state. That is the inescapable consequences of having a very aggressive interventionist policy, a global interventionist policy. There are a few other nations that can do it, but even our country has found that it puts great burdens on the American people, and they've had enough of it. They're looking for leadership, not demagogues, not tyrants, not emperors. They're looking for leaders that respect the United States Constitution and the principles it was founded on. And they're sick and tired of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party causing these messes. Don't they understand the financial situation we're in? The economic situation we're in? There are children dying all over the world today, being killed by their governments, not by gas, by bullets. or starvation or bombs being dropped. Life is not fair, and there are good and evil people across this globe. It's about time that we elect our representatives and senators where wisdom is the important qualification, not the desire to be a career politician. We need to put an end to that with term limits. What I think is going to happen, and this is speculation on my part, like I said, it's up to the people in the Middle East to stop this. We can provide some leadership, but we're not going to provide the military forces to end it. The people in the region, whether it's Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Turkey, Egypt, the Kurds in Iraq and Syria and Turkey, they need to stop killing each other. We need a lasting peace. The Kurds need a nation. It's about time that the Kurds have their own nation. And that means parts of Iraq, Iran, Turkey, and Syria need to be partitioned, and the Kurdish people have their own homeland. They have been supporters of the United States. But we have nations that don't want that to happen, namely the nations where the land would come from. They have been a persecuted people. They are Sunnis, but their ethnic group is Kurds. They're not Arabs, and they're not Turks, and they're certainly not Persian. But we need a coalition of Egypt, Jordan, the Kurds, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, to destroy the Islamic State, the Al-Nusra Front, the Al-Qaeda Syrian affiliate, as well as any other radical Islamic terrorist jihadist, and there are many in Syria, Hezbollah, who is propping up and helping the Assad regime, and finally, yes, the Assad regime. But the United States should not send military forces there. It's up to those nations that many of them have created these monsters to put them down, to kill them, and then have separate countries where you don't have the conditions for a continuing sectarian religious civil war. Will that happen? I don't know. I suspect that maybe Donald Trump is trying to form a coalition. I hope he is. But I hope he doesn't make the mistake of again sending in tens of thousands of U.S. Army Marines to fight wars in faraway places. The American people won't support that. They are sick and tired of this. Enough is enough. We have our own challenges, problems, issues at home, and we need to focus in on them. They believed in Donald Trump when he said, "I want to make America great again." And he was America first. Well, this attack last night is not putting America first. And you can see that by who was clapping, cheering the most. The very people that were not his friends. If anything, they were the opponents and enemies of both parties. I don't know if Donald Trump has shown his true colors, but many people that put their trust in him are disappointed, both in talk radio as well as his voters. I did not trust him, and I'm surprised he did this so early. He didn't have to do this. Maybe what moved him was the pictures, and it is effective propaganda, and it has been used in the past to get the United States to go to war. They always want us to come in, save them. And before you know it, they're killing us, trying to get us out. I'm a non-interventionist. I'm for limited government. I'm for minding my own business and our government to mind its business, both in the United States and outside the United States. So I'm more or less talked out on this subject. I told you what I think might be happening, and only time will tell that. As long as our role in any coalition is very limited, with very few U.S. personnel, yeah, we can provide them intelligence, we can provide them air support, artillery support, and yes, some trainers, a training group, special forces, but the fighting has to be done by the people in that nation. And always remember that question. How are we going to win the peace? What are our plans? What's our strategy? Because our armed forces are not equipped to do that job, and they probably do it the best. It's up to the people that live there to rebuild their communities, rebuild their homes, restore electrical power, water power, and the security of their neighborhoods, form governments, open the schools again, and rebuild the buildings. That is a challenge, a lot harder than a war that's largely destroying and killing people. So I wish Donald Trump and his administration well. I don't envy them. They're a challenge, but I hope Donald Trump was telling the truth when he said he was a non-interventionist. Because many people in talk radio and many people that support him are beginning, if they haven't already, felt betrayed. I said I'd give him 100 days to May 1st to see what he accomplishes. But this is very much a red flag. A popular, it'll increase his popularity, I have no doubts about that. And maybe even stop the ridiculousness of big lie media about, with no evidence yet, that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians. I hope the recent attack in Syria at least stops that nonsense, rubbish. And yes, the Russians influence our election, but that's not why Hillary Clinton lost it. You know it, I know it. Stop it. We're wasting precious time and money on distractions. That's what you're doing, distracting people with the goal to destroy Donald Trump. Shame on you. Shame on you. Now, finally, there is another event in the news. Today, around noon, at least Central Time, the Senate, by a vote of 54 yes, 45 no, confirmed Supreme Court Associate Justice Neil Gorsuch. I congratulate him. I congratulate the Senate. And I'm normally not complimentary. I've been critical of Senate Majority Leader McConnell, but I can congratulate him for using the so-called nuclear option. I never was for the 60 votes that you need to for either Supreme Court justice or another judge or legislation. Now it's simply majority rules. And yes, the senator from Kentucky was right, Mitch McConnell, that Senator Reid and the Democrats would rue the day that they used the so-called, I call it the Reid rule, but the nuclear option, so they could get a number of justices on a court. They thought they were arrogant and thought they would have the majority for many, many years, and they still might get it because they do want to give citizenship to all the illegal aliens that are here, and that's somewhere between 30 and 60 million. And if they accomplish that, they will win election after election after election and maybe even have a single party dominating this country. I don't think that's going to happen because the American people, the one reason they voted for Donald Trump is supposedly he's going to enforce immigration law besides building that big, beautiful, huge wall. See, that was the area I had concern. That was what I call a hot button issue for me. Oh, I understood the importance of one or two or three Supreme Court justices being approved, whether it's the first or second term of Donald Trump. I understood that. My lawyers focus a lot on that. And politicians use that to stop Americans from forming another party. I've given up on the Democratic and Republican Party. They have both become big government parties. Barack Obama has done serious damage, maybe even irreparable damage, to the Democratic Party. And Donald Trump has that same opportunity to do that. And if he does, the Republican Party will continue to lose people to who? Independents. And eventually, independents will become a majority. In other words, more than 50%. And then we can have real competition against the two-party tyranny of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. So congratulations to the Republicans for getting President Trump's nominee approved and confirmed. I think he'll make a great justice, and hopefully we'll have two more that truly believe in the United States Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and a representative republic, and hopefully ending the American empire. Now, to close out the show, my favorite song, America the Beautiful.
Expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.